This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Australia is known as the lucky country, but its fortunes during this pandemic have been somewhat mixed. So how do Australia's fortunes affect Malaysia? And what are the synergies between our two countries that we can capitalize on? Joining me to discuss this is the newly arrived Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia, His Excellency Dr. Justin Lee. Justin, you've been here for 6 months already, but I'm sure it's not too late to say welcome to Malaysia and welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me here today, and it's a great pleasure to join you and to join all of your listeners. I haven't been here quite 6 months yet. It's been about 4.5, but it's been a great time. We've had the COVID lockdown, of course, and the MCO, but we've, of course, been coming out of that. And it's really given me the opportunity in the last couple of months to start to get out into Kuala Lumpur and start to get out into Malaysia more broadly and to meet people. So it really has been a very useful time being here.
All right. I hope it's been an auspicious start despite the COVID situation we're in. And I want to start with that, actually, the latest COVID-19 pandemic twist. So Australia was ready to open its borders to fully vaccinated international travellers on December the 1st. But this has now been delayed by 2 weeks due to the Omicron variant. And there's understandably a lot of trepidation among Malaysians with plans to travel to Australia for work or study, given Australia's closed border policies during most of the pandemic. So what is the government's strategy in response to Omicron? What kind of factors is it looking at in making a decision on whether borders remain closed or open?
I think I'd say at the outset that governments on both sides and around the world, so in Australia and Malaysia, have of course been dealing with COVID, and it's a very fast evolving situation that's required a lot of flexible responses. And I just would like to acknowledge the great job that I've seen Malaysia doing here, and we're all learning from one another as we go ahead. But in relation to your particular question around Australia and Australia's border reopening, I would caveat what I say at the outset that again, it is a fast evolving situation, and people looking to travel, of course, need to get the latest information, because it does at the moment change on a regular basis, particularly as we're dealing with Omicron. But Australia and the Australian government is committed to reopening the border in a staged way as we're able to. Of course, we've been waiting for our vaccination rates to go up, and thankfully now we are at a level now where we've got 86% of Australians aged over 16 fully vaccinated, and that is allowing us to go ahead with this phased reopening of the border. The priority for us immediately has been for fully vaccinated Australian citizens and permanent residents and their family members travelling to Australia. So they're the ones that have been able to travel in the last month or so. The announcement that Australia made more recently was that we would resume travel for fully vaccinated international students, skilled migrants and refugees and other humanitarian temporary visa holders. But as a result of Omicron, we've paused that until the 15th of December. So that's just allowing our authorities to gain a better sense of how that is unfolding and the case numbers and how we deal with that. The other thing which Malaysia has also done is that we have got some additional limitations on travel from eight African countries as a result of Omicron, and that's very similar to the position that Malaysia has taken. And the other factor to remember in Australia, like Malaysia, is we have a federal system, and so there's two levels of arrangements that are made. So there's both the federal government arrangements from Canberra, but also it's very important that the state government arrangements. And so different states actually have different requirements. And so New South Wales and Victoria are two most populous states. They've taken an approach where they've been taking greater numbers of international travellers and Australians back and have different arrangements for quarantine on arrival. So it is complicated. And in addition to getting a visa This is the issue that you need to check with the states that you're going to, that you're getting an exemption to travel to those states.
Let's shift our attention to bilateral relations. Malaysia and Australia elevated its partnership to a Comprehensive Strategic Partnership, or CSP, at the beginning of this year. And the nomenclature sounds really impressive. It sounds important and serious. But is this more symbolic than substantive, especially given the restrictions that COVID-19 has imposed on bilateral interactions at all levels?
I think it's really substantive, and the great thing about it is, you know, it recognises and elevates the relationship, but recognises the real strong foundation that Australia and Malaysia has. You know, we've got a very long-standing, friendly relationship in many areas. We've got a $20 billion two-way trade. We've got about 180,000 Australians of Malaysian origin. We've got at least 300,000 Malaysians have studied in Australia. And I think the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership really builds on that foundation, and it does bring some substance to it. It was agreed by our two prime ministers back in January. What that does is it really identifies areas for us to further practical cooperation on. So from, you know, a government perspective, we're very interested in how do we actually identify really practical things that we can do together? And I think that's where the substance comes from. A lot of the good relationship between our two countries is built upon what ordinary Malaysians and Australians do together, what our businesses do together. But what the CSP does is it provides a framework for the two governments to identify, well, these are the areas where we can do more, where we can agree on cooperation and where we can try and do information exchanges, capacity building, and cooperate further together.
And no doubt it's still early days in your tenure, Justin. You've only been here 4 months, as you said. At this stage, what are your priority initiatives under the CSP framework?
I think one of the really critical things which has come about, which is really clear, is cooperation in the area of health. So we have an innovation and technology stream under the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. And we've seen with COVID-19, of course, just how important cooperation is in the health sector. So we think that there's great opportunities there. We know Malaysia's very interested in the bigger issues around vaccine research and development, in building capacity in genomic sequencing so we can identify variants of COVID-19. So I think there's great potential and really immediate interest in that. But also dealing with issues like mental health, you know, that's been very prominent, particularly with the lockdowns, making sure that our mental health is going going well. Also in the economic cooperation, one of the key things will be how do we come out of COVID? How do we build the economic recovery out of COVID? Making sure that our markets remain open, that we can trade our way out. We know that Malaysia is an export-based economy, as is Australia. We need to keep on selling things in order to create jobs and to have our economies come out of the COVID-19 situation. We have a Malaysia-Australia Free Trade Agreement, which we've agreed that we will review. There's also Australia, New Zealand and ASEAN Free Trade Agreement, which is currently being refreshed. And we'd really like to work with and encourage Malaysia to ratify the CPTPP and the RCEP agreements as well, because they send really strong signals that we support open markets and we support continuing to trade and create jobs.
Okay. And as you said, we do have the Malaysia-Australia FTA already in place since, I believe, 2012 or 2013. I am wondering, though, looking at trade relations, Australia isn't among Malaysia's top 10 trading partners, despite having this FTA. And there's no doubt the pandemic has further reduced trade activity between us. Why isn't trade a lot bigger, considering this long-standing FTA that we mentioned?
Well, to say that, you know, we are close in terms of partners, I think we're just outside of the top 10 in terms of trading partners with one another. We do have a $20 billion trade. But it is true to a degree that both Australia and Malaysia are both commodities producing countries. So we both produce agricultural products. which we sell to one another, but also which we sell to other countries more so as well.
So we're competing for the same market. That's why we...
I wouldn't say that, because we produce different sorts of agricultural products, and so we do import from one another. But I think that what that means is there is big potential, particularly in Australia, for Australia and for our relationship, for more value adding. So I think what we're very interested in is where we can sell or bring in agricultural products into Malaysia, and where they can be produced into other products which are then sold onto third markets or sold here in Malaysia. There's a lot of potential in that. Wheat is the great example. You know, Malaysia doesn't produce wheat. Australia does. But then you can turn that into noodles and other things that can be sold both in Malaysia and into other markets. So I think that sort of economic engagement has enormous potential, and I know there's a lot of interest from Australian producers in that. And also Malaysia, you probably have a slightly lower cost structure here than we have in Australia. So again, that value-adding Malaysia has some advantages on. So we continue to encourage and hope that the investment environment here can attract Australian producers to bring their products in, which can then be value-added and sold off into third markets or here in Malaysia.
How does the Australian business community view Malaysia as an investment destination, especially in light of the pandemic and also the political turbulence of the past 2 years here? From your engagement with Australian businesses, do they see the grass as greener outside of Malaysia when it comes to investments?
Yeah, we do have some very prominent Australian companies here that are setting up BlueScope Steel, for example, which manufactures products here for the construction industry. So there are some well-established Australian companies that have come here as a result of that investment environment and that cost structure. I should also say things like the halal sector, I think, are very interesting. You know, Malaysia has a strong reputation for halal certification, and Australia adheres to that, and possibly value-adding products here that can then be sold into halal markets as well. So, you know, I haven't had any particular issues that are raised at the moment. I think with all investment environments, looking at the regulatory environment, making sure that the regulations that are required are as clear as possible and can be worked through, I think is always important. But I know that there is a number of efforts to facilitate investment. I know that's encouraged. I attended a very good summit put on by the Sangor state government recently, where they were talking about the investment environment here. So I think it's very encouraging. Obviously, it's been difficult with COVID, but I know that through these summits, be they virtual summits or in person, that sort of effort to link people up is now being made.
All right. I'm speaking to His Excellency Dr. Justin Lee, Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia. When we return, we'll cover the breakdown in relations between Australia and China, as well as regional implications of the AUKUS Defence Pact, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to the Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and joining me on the show today is His Excellency Dr. Justin Lee, Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia. Justin, the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated a downward spiral in relations between Australia and China, which has seen Beijing impose a raft of trade sanctions on Australian goods, ranging from wine to seafood. Canberra has described these moves as economic coercion. Can I ask, what is Australia being coerced to do?
I would say in relation to our relations with China that we want a very constructive relationship with China. We really want to have a relationship that is mutually beneficial and respectful. China, like as here in Malaysia, China is our largest trading partner. So we recognise that it's very important to have that strong relationship. But as I say, a relationship based on mutually beneficial relations and respectful relations. We want to be able to discuss our differences. We recognise that we have differences on certain issues, and to be able to work together to address those issues. I guess a few years ago, you know, we've been very clear around what are issues of our national interest and what are issues of sovereignty. And whether it be in some particular areas of investment in critical technologies or critical infrastructure, we made decision that not just in relation to China, but in relation to foreign countries more generally, that we needed to make sure that we were defending those national interests and those sovereignty issues.
So you're saying that that China is coercing Australia to give up its national sovereignty, or?
Well, there are certain areas where Australia made a decision that we needed to protect our, be it in areas of critical infrastructure or others, and of course, I think as a result of that, that commenced some of the economic measures that we saw that China took. But really, we are committed to working through that. We're committed to having a mutually beneficial relationship, as I say, with China, and recognise the importance of China to our economic relations and good relations with China more broadly.
I'm wondering how long will Australia be able to withstand these sanctions imposed by China? I think the sanctions at the moment are costing Australia some $5.4 billion. You can correct me if I'm wrong. In trade value, I see that some states in Australia are striking out on their own to court Chinese investment, which seems to indicate that domestically within Australia, there is a difference of opinion in how the government is going about in its approach to China. What will be the tipping point? How will Australia go about to repairing its relationship with China if needed?
I think what you're talking about there in relation to the economic conditions in Australia, I think the Australian government's undertaking a range of measures at the moment, including in relation to COVID-19, because, of course, these are unprecedented times. It's not just any particular measures that are being taken by any particular country, but also the impact on trade and investment as a result of COVID-19. So it's always in Australia's interests to look to diversify our markets, to look to different opportunities, new markets for our products, where they're most needed at the moment. So I think that there's a process going on, both at a national level and by producers themselves, to find markets for Australian products. We have quite a lot of confidence in Australian products, and Australian products are good quality, well-priced. We do have quite some success in finding markets for Australian products. So continuing trade diversification, I think, is an important priority for us that addresses a whole range of headwinds that are currently encountered on the economic side, including as a result of COVID-19.
Let's shift to something that is concerning Malaysia and other partners in ASEAN, and that's the announcement of the AUKUS alliance. And it was awkward, to put it mildly, I suppose. It caused a damaging rift with France. It caught many in the region off guard. A key U.S. official, Kurt Campbell, has described the AUKUS alliance as a defining effort against China's actions. And all this seems to raise military temperature in the region, something that ASEAN is understandably nervous about. So how is Australia assuaging concerns that ASEAN won't become collateral damage in this dance-off between China and the West?
Yeah, I think the most important thing to emphasise with the AUKUS arrangement is that it's at its heart a technology sharing arrangement for nuclear-powered submarines, I should emphasise that, but also a whole range of other technologies as well. It's not a new alliance or security pact, as has been described. We already have alliances with those countries, with the US and with the UK, as we have with a whole range of other countries, and including with Malaysia. We have arrangements under the five-power defence arrangements. But at its heart, AUKUS is about exchange of technology. And that technology is really fundamental to the defence of Australia, and that's the most important element. Submarines, Australia's a maritime nation. We're surrounded by oceans on all sides. So submarines have always been an important part of Australia's defence. And we made the judgment that we required a higher capability submarine to deal with our assessment of the strategic situation going forward. And so that is what made the shift from conventionally powered submarines to nuclear powered submarines. But the AUKUS arrangement, I would say at its heart, is about technology sharing. And it is so that Australia can have capable technology and the latest technology for the defence of Australia. But of course, it also helps us support regional the regional environment as well, and support a continuing free, open, prosperous and resilient region as well. And the sorts of contributions that we are already making to regional stability as well as the defence of Australia.
I understand the rationale for the AUKUS alliance and the importance of technology transfer. But to outsiders looking at it, it does seem that Australia is taking this very antagonistic approach to China. And there are concerns that this is just increasing those tensions and the temperature. So how would you respond to that kind of argument, that Australia isn't helping calm the waters, but is really churning it up instead?
Yes, and you know, we've heard the position of the Malaysian government as well, and we've had a number of conversations. We had our foreign minister travel to Australia very recently, and we've had conversations at a number of levels. So you know, we've been very conscious of hearing that, and wanting to make reassurances around a range of issues that have come up as a result of that, including in relation to nuclear non-proliferation and our ongoing commitment to that, and to really emphasise that we'll continue to be very strong supporters of the nuclear non-proliferation regime, and that this is about nuclear power and nuclear-powered submarines as opposed to any weapons. But again, in terms of in relation to the framing around China, that for us, you know, this is about the defence of Australia. This is about us having the capabilities that we need into the future. These submarines will be built some decades into the future. It's making assessments around what the strategic environment will be like in the future and what we need to continue to defend Australia and contribute to a resilient and free, open and prosperous region going forward into that future.
All right. Justin, I want to switch to climate change and sustainable development, which is the big buzzword of the year, especially following COP26. Australia has been criticised for its climate change policies, or lack thereof, some would argue. And you held the role of Ambassador of Climate Change from 2007 to 2014. I want to ask, how coherent is Australia's response to climate change? And why is Australia seen as out of step with the rest of the world on this front?
Thanks for the question, and always happy to talk about climate change. It really is a really critically important issue. It's recognised as critically important around the world, including in Australia. I think that the debate in Australia is what we do about climate change, how we respond. Like all countries, we need to go through a transition. We need to go through a transition from reliance on fossil fuels, from reliance on coal-fired power generation. And Australia is committed to the international targets. We've committed to net zero. We have our 2030 target. We'll seek to on track to exceeding our 2030 emissions reduction target. But what we've been really interested in is the technologies that will allow us and the pathway that will allow us to transition to that net zero world. It is challenging for countries like Australia, where we have a lot of dependence on fossil fuels, and how do we make that transition? And there's lots of things we're looking at.
Some would argue that Australia isn't really making a transition because the fossil fuel industry, it seems to be increasing its output rather than reducing it to transition to another energy source.
I think if you have a look at what's occurring in Australia, you really do see quite a dramatic transition, particularly around renewable energy, wind turbines coming on. We've got one of the highest uptakes of rooftop solar in the world. They've been supported by feed-in tariffs, or you know, people can get money back for supplying solar power back to the grid. We're obviously now talking about the electric vehicles, we're talking about carbon capture and storage, we're talking about hydrogen, green hydrogen. So we're committed to investing in all of those sectors, which will allow that transition to occur. But as I say, it's not going to be an easy transition, and require a lot of thought and a lot of effort to bring those technologies online. And again, we're very interested in working with international partners in some of those fields, particularly in the renewables area, in the hydrogen area. I think that there's lots of interesting potential there.
Justin, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I've been speaking to His Excellency Dr. Justin Lee, Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia, on The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.